Scoggins out today. Caller in. Dave, should we just talk bowling two segments with Caller?
I'm sure he could do it.
Let's guess. What does Caller think of bowling? You go first. What's your guess? What does Matthew think of bowling?
I don't think he's an avid bowler, but I think it's a, yeah, I'd go. If I got buddies going, sure, I'll go.
I think he'd go on. I'm guessing he's pretty good. I mean, it's Buffalo. What do you do all winter there? I mean, how many Sabres games?
Eat wings and roll, baby.
Yeah. Okay. What kind of bowler were you as a kid? Do you have any interest in bowling right now?
You guys are way off. I have not bowled since I was 13 years old. Mm. No interest. Sorry.
Wow.
Support the small businesses that are bowling alleys, but that's not something that I do very often.
Doesn't sound like
you're supporting him. No. Headline of the tweet. Caller says bowling is beneath him.
For losers, I think is what
yeah,
I heard.
I think it is. The dominant story for the Minnesota Vikings through five games is their defense, okay? On the defense, whether it's individually, schemes, concepts, what has impressed you most highlighting what took place yesterday in the win over the Jets?
Well, they've been knocking down opponents like bowling pins, actually, on defense.
Thank you.
Yep, you're welcome. I kind of threw
some splits out there in the second half when it, when it was close.
I won't continue with this. So I think that what has come together here so brilliantly for the Vikings defense is Brian Flores' mastermind is not limited. That with the players that they have, the different skill sets, the versatility, the experience, and the skill, he can do whatever the hell he wants. And whatever the hell he wants is all sorts of stuff that just makes an absolute nightmare for quarterbacks. He can line up any player at any place at any time. I mean, that Andrew Van Ginkle interception is funny because the same exact interception got thrown by Sam Darnold in training camp at the night practice, and we all kind of looked around and went, I think that's going to happen again at some point in the regular season because nobody even knew where Andrew Van Ginkle came from. He just sort of arrived in that zone and intercepted a pass, and there he was. And I think when you have players who can rush the passer, stop the run, drop back in coverage. I mean, Blake Cashman, what an absolute monster yesterday, stuffing the run, hitting Rodgers, causing pressure, covering. I mean, everything. They have players who can do everything. And then, you know, we all were concerned about Danielle Hunter leaving, but I think Jonathan Greenard actually fits a little better with Brian Flores and kind of the basis of his defense, where he likes to have those rushers way out wide. And you saw Greenard in one of the biggest moments come from out wide there and just roast the tackle and cause pressure on Rodgers. And then, you know, the interception by Stephon Gilmore is not quite as wowing as you would see on some highlight reel, but I think it's an all-universe play because he doesn't grab the guy. He just keeps his feet moving and stays in front of him. And then as he's going down to the ground to actually catch the ball, a lot of corners can't catch it if you throw right to him, to actually make that catch and finish out that game. I mean, it's just every person that they brought in for this defense. John Ward knocked down a ball. They have depth as well on this defense. Every person that they've brought in has fit perfectly with what Flores wants to do. And then when the plays have been there to be made, they make them. That's what makes these guys good and makes them worth a lot of money that they were able to spend because they didn't spend $40 million on a quarterback. I think that's really the story of the defense, is it all coming together perfectly.
Let's talk about the quarterback they face. I keep going back to his last year in Green Bay, Rodgers, where the two previous years he was great. They came up short in the playoffs, but he had just two brilliant regular seasons when he's, what, 37, 38, whatever he might be. And then that last year, he was not very good. And that was lost in the conversation of, is it time for him to leave Green Bay? Where is he going to go? Darkness retreat, Jets, Achilles, and now he comes back. And I get it. Father time, undefeated. But I think there were some signs that last year in Green Bay, which were fairly telling. They don't have a very good offensive line. He's got one star wide receiver who he featured a lot yesterday. But, you know, that one interception, where, not the Gilmore one, where Gilmore makes the great play, which you alluded to, but the one where, who ended up getting that intercept? Was that Murphy?
Bynum?
Yeah, no, Bynum. Bynum gets it, exactly. That's a type of throw that Rodgers, Matthew, would never make. There was those years, you know better than me, where his interception rate was like 1.4% or something. And he never would force it in. And if you'd watch him and you want a Green Bay to win, you say, hey, sometimes you got to force it in. And that was just the type of throw where I thought, this is a guy who still has some of it in him, but doesn't have all of it in him, doesn't trust the offensive line, is facing this ferocious defense. And that is a throw of a guy who's not close to the guy he once was, even a few years ago.
Yeah, and I think that when we saw some other quarterbacks decline who were legends, they were still able to be pretty effective. I mean, heck, Peyton Manning grinded his way in a miserable season.
Yeah,
but
right.
but when he came back in the playoffs, he did pretty well, at least to get them to the Super Bowl, and then the defense took over. Drew Brees was really good toward the end of his career. Tom Brady somehow found a way to get the Bucs into the playoffs. You know, I think that there is a gap there between those guys as leaders and Aaron Rodgers, who just seems to, after every mistake, want to throw somebody in the ocean. I mean, he seems so annoyed, frustrated, doesn't look like he's having any fun at all.
I mean, can I jump in on that? Because I think body language experts is one of the greatest scams of all time. But I couldn't agree with you more about that yesterday. I mean, he just looks like it's one of the worst days of his life.
Which, you know, Flores does do that to quarterbacks, but he's doing it every week now at this point, where, you know, a throw goes behind a wide receiver. And you would think that someone just told Aaron Rodgers the world was round. I mean, he was really upset. So, he looks absolutely miserable. The other thing is that you mentioned, I think, is completely right, which is if you can adapt your playing style as an older quarterback and be a little more safe, you know, a little more, I think, understanding of where your skills are, then you can continue to survive. But he was still trying to make Aaron Rodgers' back shoulder type throws,
yeah, right,
where he just flicks it, and it looks like me going from the green from 230 yards. It just didn't have the juice like it did in years past. So I thought, I think it's a combination. Like he was miserable and he was bad, but also Flores made it worse for him.
The Sam Darnold story was absolutely fabulous early. They have won the last two games. They had sizable leads in the last two games. They were hanging on for dear life the last two games. And his numbers and the eye test told us that this wasn't the Sam Darnold we saw earlier in the year. How much would you evaluate that the circumstances, that the momentum was lost in Green Bay, that the Jets have a very good defense, or is Sam Darnold regressing to the mean?
So I think you can't downplay the Jets' defense is really awesome. They have two great corners. DJ Reed is every bit the star that Sauce Gardner is. They pressured the quarterback. The right guard was still a massive issue again yesterday. Ed Ingram gave up 5 pressures and was by far their lowest graded by PFF guard. So they were able to pressure Darnold pretty consistently. It was raining. It was in another country. I mean, there's a lot of different reasons to look at that one and go, and he got really popped quite hard early in the game, which probably threw him off a little bit as he was trying to find his breath there and might have been concerned about having it happen again. And he has taken some serious hits in these first couple games. But I think also this is the reality of Sam Darnold throughout his career, is that the guy has either been blazing hot or ice cold. And normally he's never had a team that will pick him up when he's struggling, right? And Jefferson flying across the middle of the field when they need a big first down at the end of that game to move the ball. Jefferson causing flags left and right. An entire drive was just the Jets being penalized. But that's a big deal. Those yards don't go in the completions and attempts for Sam Darnold, but they were kind of deserved yesterday and would have made it look a lot better if we counted those as completions. But I think that it was kind of a combination of everything, but I would give the Jets a ton of credit. And I think with Darnold, the truth is that he's never as great as he looks at his best, and he's never as bad as he looks at his worst. What I would like to see from Kevin O'Connell, and once again, recognizing how good the Jets' corners are, get Sam Darnold a bucket. Find a way to get him an easy layup that just gets him back on track, because he overthrows a deep ball and misses a deep ball, and O'Connell's response seems to be
another deep ball.
Let's throw another deep ball.
Another 25-yard out in between two. Yeah. I would also say this about O'Connell, Matthew. And I get it. No Jones, right?
Yeah.
Man, he just does not want to run the ball. It just seems like there are multiple opportunities again. And I get it. It's so obvious that he wants to show this team, I'm aggressive. I trust you guys. He says that to him in May. He says in June. Sometimes it just doesn't make sense. And there were times the last 2 weeks where it didn't make sense.
I'll tell you where it really didn't make sense. I have the numbers right up here in front of me. Screen passes yesterday, 2 attempts for 1 yard. That's been one of the biggest assets of their game, and it just was not there at all. And there were several plays where you could say, look, I like aggressiveness. Bruce Arians, no risk it, no biscuit, push the ball down the field. I'm all for it. But there's also, it's 3rd and 2, it's 4th and 2, and 2 passes travel 20 or 30 yards down the field. Like, what are we doing here?
Yeah.
And the numbers really match up with their lack of success in 3rd and 4th down and short. I was looking, it'll be worse after this game, but they were the 9th worst team in the league since KOC took over. And I know that Aaron Jones is a part of that, but there's not even the short passing game to really speak of. Jalen Naylor has been great this year. Was not targeted at all, not a single time in yesterday's game. Jordan Addison, I think he was 3 for 8 when throwing at him, and every one of them was downfield. So I do think that there's a there's a situational football that is lacking, and I don't know if it's ever going to change at this point. I thought if it's ever going to change, it's after what happened last week, and now you're up 17, and the answer was still to push the pass button. But I think we probably should have known that after Josh Dobbs threw 34 passes in a game against the Bears where he had 4 picks. Like, he's just going to keep doing it. So that roller coaster is something that I think we're going to have to get used to riding.
All right, pause coming up. Lynx and Gopher Talk, we can come back. But you mentioned biscuit. I'm with Harrigan. The ideal breakfast sandwich is on a biscuit if the biscuit is at peak level. Do you agree with us?
No, I do. Yeah, but I like all breakfast sandwiches. Give me croissant. This morning I had a bagel with egg and cheese and bacon. Fantastic. I'll do any breakfast.
A bagel sandwich is slightly overrated. Harrigan, you with me?
That's fine. I like all of them. I agree with all of them. I mean, if the biscuit is on point, it's fantastic.
The biscuit's a 10. The rest, you're reaching as high as a 6, maybe.
Yeah.
I like croissants.
And we're a bad, of course you do. You're Mr. France.
Really?
Doesn't bowl, but he likes to smoke in Paris. I mean, that's our guy here. He'll have a cigarette in his hand when he comes back. We'll talk about what didn't go right for the Lynx and what went right for the Gopher football team. Matthew Collar in for Chip. Back in a moment. CCO. We're going to talk October 7th, what happened and how the Middle East is still reeling. We'll do that in about 10, 12 minutes. Matthew Collar's here. Let's start with the Lynx. I don't think anybody should be surprised. This has been a competitive series. The Lynx get off to a good start yesterday. They're up 2-1. They're facing a talented team. Alyssa Thomas was great. By the way, she can call out teammates like a lot of folks. She's not a shrinking violet on the floor. What concerned you most for the Lynx yesterday regarding Game 5 tomorrow night at Target Center?
That was an interesting game because the Sun had been without one of their best shooters, Ty Harris.
Yep.
And she had only played 13 minutes in the series in the previous 2 games dealing with an injury. And then she played 30 minutes and scored 20 points and shot the absolute lights out. And one of the things the Sun were able to do is put out small, fast lineup that could shoot that kept Myesha Hines-Allen on the bench for the Lynx. And she's been a really good power forward for them since coming over at the trade deadline. The thing about it, if you're Cheryl Reeve, though, that you can't be too upset about is that Nafisa Collier still got her points to the free throw line. They shot 47%, 38% from three, and this is normally the best defense in the WNBA. If they score 82 points and they shoot like that, they almost always win, except for the other team just got crazy hot. I was looking at this stat that Connecticut shot 9% higher than they usually do in the regular season. It was just one of those days where everybody seemed to be clicking for the Sun with hot shooting, but coming to Minnesota, I don't know if that's going to happen again. I really don't know if there's some massive adjustment that Cheryl Reeve needs to make, that she just has to hope that Ty Harris doesn't make 4 out of 5 threes again, that Alyssa Thomas doesn't get going with her ball movement where she was fantastic. But this always looked like a 5-game knockdown, drag-out battle between these two teams. They are as close as it gets. You look at it on paper, you look at the two great coaches, you look at all the star talent. Half these players were in the Olympics. I mean, it's just a really, really good series.
Yeah, just staying with Collier, 29-13. Okay, that's a tremendous game. As I watched most of the game, I didn't necessarily feel like they were just saying, you just get yours, though. It was a game where Collier was still making a lot of plays. Is Connecticut, could you see them daring the other Lynx players even more than they have so far? Or is yesterday's numbers with Collier a little bit more, like I said at the start, that even when she's facing the aggressive defense, that's just how talented she is right now?
Yeah, I think it's how talented she is and also how talented her coach is, because it was really fascinating to watch the last two games where they were bringing Alyssa Thomas away from the basket. They did this to Brittany Griner and put her in hell in the first series, because when you have these bigs that have to guard the perimeter, that's so much space underneath for Nafisa Collier. And actually, when she got matched up against Thomas, she did a good job. And they've also done a good job at running her away from Dawana Bonner, who is tall and lanky and can actually block some of those fadeaways. So you see when they get set up just how good Nafisa Collier is at finding space in the paint, finding opportunities, but also how much effort they're going to on offense, how many screens that they're setting and how many switches they're getting in order to get her those favorable matchups. And then oftentimes if she ends up against one of the guards, she just gets fouled and she ends up at the free throw line. So I think it's a combination of that. And there was one point in the game where they showed Cheryl Reeve and the mics caught her just screaming, like, Steve, be aggressive or go to the basket. Mm-hmm. It's time for you to score. And I think she's really developed that killer instinct over the last couple of years at the pushing of Cheryl Reeve to just go score, make a play. It's your time. And I expect that to continue to be the case. But you know, they can't get Courtney Williams in foul trouble as they did early in the game. She had three fouls and ends up going to the bench. That changes the dynamic on offense quite a bit when she's not in there, even though Natisha Heideman was quite good. But, you know, it really is going to – it's just one of those games that you could see coming down to final shot type of situation, because for every answer the Lynx have, there was adjustments. And then, you know, they need to hit their threes as well. I mean, Bridget Carlton – has been one of the best three-point shooters in the whole league when I think 2-for-11 shooting, which usually doesn't happen. Kayla McBride hasn't been hot in this series. So they need somebody else, as you said, to step up and hit their open shots, because that was kind of what happened in game four, is they just missed a lot of them.
Yeah, you've had four teams really separate themselves from the pack, and that's been on display in the semifinals. Gopher football, we're both watching. Fleck is conservative, but he has thrown the ball more certain times this year, but they had the running game going really well. I mean, Taylor was an absolute stud. The backup was pretty good. As what turned out to be the winning drive was developing, and then it turns out to be the 4th-and-1, did you expect him to go for it and say, hey, if we don't get it, then you got, you know, you got, what, 60 yards or so to go to set yourself up for a field goal? Or did you think he was going to kick a field goal before he made the decision?
It's funny because I'm in a group chat with a few former Gophers, Andrew Kramer and Dane Mizutani. And Dane was at the game, Andrew's watching, and we're texting each other, what's the right decision here? What's the right decision here? Because honestly, I don't know, and I didn't see it. With NFL, someone's got the data with the NFL for every decision. And I honestly don't know, because if you kick the field goal, then you're forcing USC to go all the way down the field, short period of time. You're making sure you come away with the lead there. But then again, if you get in the end zone, I mean, you pretty much win the game if you get into the end zone. So, but if you don't, then it's still tied. I guess my thought was that USC could also get a safety, and if they had to go 99 yards, good luck with that, getting all the way down the field with so little time yet. What I liked about it, though, and I was rooting for PJ to go for it, is there's only so many opportunities you get to get a huge win like this, right?
Mm-hmm. And he needed it.
Yes. He's been short on those big wins.
Yes.
And they've boxed him into game stuff.
For sure.
And I thought he just said, bleep it. We're doing this. We're winning this game right here, right now. And you saw the energy and intensity. And it shows that when he makes right decisions, how fun he could be as a head coach. Him yelling in the referee's face because it obviously was a touchdown.
Yeah,
I don't know what they
terrible
saw.
Terrible call.
Unbelievable.
I mean, just brutal. Yeah.
His whole body was over. Like,
yes.
His whole torso was over. The ball would have had to have been in his thigh pad for that not to be a touchdown. But anyway, so I loved it from that perspective. I don't know what was right statistically, but that was one of the most fun Gopher games we've seen in a long time.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate it. We'll talk Friday.
Sounds good. Thanks.
And add to it to have Coy Parrish come up with that interception. The kid from Esco, who he's full factor on the team. I mean,
he could play a little bit.
Yeah, there was a fair debate early, like, what are you going to do? Are you going to redshirt him? Concern about if he doesn't play enough. Does he reconsider, go somewhere else next year? Well, then there's an injury. Okay, he's doing a little punt return stuff. No, he was making plays throughout the game before just stunning athletic skills on that play. They've had a run of tight ends. Excuse me, of not tight ends. Run of safeties with this program. They've got another one. 34 past 2, October 7th, a part of the conversation, after traffic and weather on CCU. So trying to understand all this, Dave Harrigan, but the last period of time today, some rumors had developed that the amazing Mary Jo Copeland, who is a fixture on this show right around Christmas every year and has been for years and years and years, had passed away. That someone had posted this rumor somewhere on social media.
Seems like Facebook.
On Facebook. Mary Jo Copeland, according to Sharon and Karen Hans, and the entire enterprise, which Mary Jo Copeland herself has built with the help of hundreds of thousands, they are saying Mary Jo Copeland is fine.
Doing very well.
And that she's with us now.
Continuing to serve the public.
Maybe we might have to reach out to Mary Jo tomorrow. An excuse to have her on.
Not like we need an excuse, but let's use it.
Yeah, let's use it. It's always an extraordinary opportunity for us to talk to Mary Jo, considering the amazing things she's done for millions when you consider the ripple effect she has had. 1 year ago today, 1,200 people were brutally killed. Innocents. Clearly, Hamas and Israel have had conflicts for a long, long time. This wasn't military on military. This was Hamas with elaborate, specific, detailed, years-long planning to kill innocent individuals who, yes, are Israelis living in Israel. This wasn't a general. This wasn't a sergeant. This wasn't a member of the government. This is people at a concert. This is people at a kibbutz. This is people at their homes. And they were brutally tortured and killed. 1,200 individuals. And when you think about the proportionality of that, Dave, compared to our population and the numbers that would be, staggering figure. And you had the hostages. And what have we had? We've had limited release. We've had bodies of deceased soldiers turned over. We've had attempts of capturing hostages and hostages killed right before. The number discussed publicly right now is 97 hostages. But the belief by informed sources that a certain percentage of those hostages are dead and their Hamas is unwilling to turn over the bodies. Hamas is disgusting. They're grotesque. They're despicable. They're indefensible. Simple as that. Civilians living in Gaza, there is a certain percentage of them, Dave Harrigan, who openly and of their own volition support Hamas. Hamas was elected to lead Gaza in, what, 2006. You also have hundreds of thousands in Gaza who are innocent, who are civilians, and want absolutely no part of Hamas. But Dave Harrigan, what happens if you speak out in Gaza against Hamas?
You don't speak out anymore.
You're tortured and you're killed and loved ones are killed.
Yes. Right, just you.
Right in front of you. Bibi Netanyahu was the leader when they were attacked. And no matter what country, if you're the leader, you take plenty of the responsibility. Sometimes there are open areas where what did leadership do? Obviously with 9/11, we had that analyzed here. And a lot has been analyzed on Netanyahu and what was happening, what was not happening. Am I a fan of Bibi Netanyahu as a leader? I'm not. I think he has been an agent of force. He has had too many opportunities. He is facing criminal charges. He is, even within his own government, rarely wants to work together and has perpetually been dismissive and belittling of a two-state solution. Hamas has not always been running Gaza. How are you going to have a two-state solution if Gaza is going to be run by Hamas? Good luck, right, Dave? I mean, good luck. Because Palestinians should be allowed that want no part of Hamas to live in peace. Just like those Israelis who 1,200 were slaughtered. There was going to be an overwhelming response from Netanyahu. That was a given. And sadly, in war, innocents will die. I think anyone who trusts all of the numbers of civilians coming out of the agency, which is run by Gaza, you're naive. But thousands and thousands of too many innocent Palestinians have died. I believe that 1,000%. And I'm not expecting Netanyahu and Israel to say, you got us. Okay, so we're going to sit back. Because you now have the escalation of what's happening with Iran and Hezbollah. And you're in an area where Israel's not looking around at a lot of supporters, right? They're not looking around at a lot of other countries who are their allies. It seemed that we were close to what would have been of an extraordinary agreement between Israel and Saudi Arabia. And by the way, the Trump administration absolutely deserves credit for the Abraham Accords. They deserve credit for some of the buildup of Israel and Saudi Arabia. The Biden administration was continuing that. Some of the attacking may have been tied to that, but Hamas has wanted to attack Israel all along. By the way, Israel's wanted to attack Hamas all along, too. It is an extraordinarily difficult situation. I would prefer if Israel had different leadership to try to get this done. But if anybody thinks that a different leader would automatically say, ceasefire, we're good, there's so much of the ceasefire crowd in this country that never, ever mentions Hamas started the bleep. And what about the hostages? Because, yes, I don't know how many thousands of Palestinian civilians have died, but it's way, way too many. And do I think, I think it's clear, by the way, that this administration, in trying to exert leverage on Netanyahu to be more precise, to use your intelligence more in specific strikes versus the broad overall, the leverage hasn't worked, Dave. You know, it's been billions and billions and billions that already were going to Israel and ratcheted up. And when they briefly held off of some of our military armament, we relented because of the box. Because you've got Iran right there. You've got Hezbollah right there. You've got Hamas right there. And you have you still have Iraq looming, too. We don't talk about Iraq much, but and other countries, which Syria. So you want to support Israel. So where do you really have the leverage? And of the upcoming choices, Trump's just going to flip the keys to Bibi Netanyahu and basically say, obliterate them. And Harris can talk in this nuanced position. And she gives a fairly lousy answer on an incredibly complicated issue to Bill Whitaker tonight in 60 Minutes. But is she really going to say no to our support, whether it's what we've sent over in the last couple weeks, what we've always provided? So this is an area of the globe that has been fighting for our entire lifetime.
A lot longer than that.
And way past it. You're right.
Yeah, you say it's a extremely difficult situation. It feels more like an impossible situation.
Yeah.
You know, without complete annihilation, you know, whether that be of Israel, of, you know, whatever. There's no solution.
There's no easy snap your finger solution. There isn't. But to say you just sit off to the side, or you say, like, you know, when Trump will say on Russia and Ukraine, I've got the solution, or I've got the solution here, although his solution here is, I don't think he would care if tens of thousands of Palestinians were killed.
No.
He wants to generalize. You know, we've seen what? An incredible rise of anti-Semitism since October 7th.
Horrible.
And plenty of the more recent anti-Semitism has come from the left. There's no denying that. The rise of white supremacists from the middle last decade, they weren't lefties. So you've got a double shot of the anti-Semitism. We also have Islamophobia going on in this country, right? If you're a Palestinian or you're a Muslim, well, we just assume you're with Gaza, or pathetic individuals do that. So if anybody's optimistic right now, I don't know how you can be, because it's so incredibly daunting, and we're in a worse situation a year after. Where are we going to be a year from now? Who else? What other country is going to come in and support this conflict? What happens if Iran comes back with even further force? What happens if Israel attacks nuclear sites? What are we going to do? So it is a harrowing situation, and if anybody thinks one side has the easy solution, they don't. It's just not out there. It's 52 past 2. We have a host in the studio. Oh, I like this, straight down the middle, like I'll be golfing now with these Twins games.
I know what you do.
Will Dave finish the show?
That's the question we're all asking today.
Yeah. I think it adds a new part of drama.
You know, I like to shake things up. Everybody tunes into radio to hear a specific thing. When things shift and they change, and pow, 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 you don't know what's going to happen next.
You can go
Could it be Dave? Could it be Susie? Could it be the guy selling tacos down on the corner?
Yeah.
That's the excitement of WCCO.
He's really good. I think the taco guy is solid.
What's your go-to taco?
Tonight, tacos. No.
What kind
carnitas?
Of taco?
Carnitas.
You know what?
Doesn't sound like you're a taco guy.
Here's the deal. I will be ashamed to admit this, but I really like the new chicken fiesta tacos that Taco Bell is offering. To me, it is one of the best of the newest tacos that have been introduced.
That's the taco he's going with?
Well, you wonder why he had to tap out after an hour last week if he's dining
allegedly.
At a fiesta.
Whoa.
Allegedly that was the reason.
You never know who's going to come back next break. We should do a show like that where everybody gathers here, you know, and all of a sudden the first segment, it's DeRusha. Then he's out. Then it's Schrader. Then it's maybe a fired former employee comes in.
Ooh. Who would you bring back?
That's a good question.
How about Shelby? Only you don't even introduce that he's here. You just have him take over as one of us.
Well, he'd
stay
for the next 2 hours, though. I mean, he's not leaving. He loves the sound of his voice too much. He's going nowhere, so the game would end with him. Dave, glad you're healthy.
Thank you.
He's back. Dave's going to take you home. DeRusha now is living in Portugal and may never return. And the show's policy is we hope he stays.
Yeah.
We've moved on. Schrader in the afternoons. DeRusha, dead to us. We'll talk to you tomorrow at noon, everybody.